You're in tune to the Voice of the Valley, KROX in Crookston, Minnesota, 1260 AM and 105.7 FM, as well as 92.1 FM in Grand Forks and East Grand Forks. It's 1141 AM here on this Thursday, August 31st. I'm Cameron Heron, and it's time for the Valley Talk program. And I've got a very special guest on today's Valley Talk. It's Angie Peltier, regional educator of the University of Minnesota. How are you doing today, Angie?
I'm fine, Cameron. Thanks. How are you?
Yep, I'm doing pretty well. It's looking like kind of a dreary day, but if we get some rain, I'm sure that'll be very nice for a lot of the farmers. And
you bet.
Yeah. The first thing that I do with most of my guests is I just want to let the listeners know kind of what you do. So you want to describe kind of what your role is?
Sure. So the University of Minnesota is a land-grant university. And part of the idea of land-grant universities is we are to extend the knowledge that's generated at the university to the taxpayers of the state. And so University of Minnesota Extension extends the research out to the taxpayers and members of the state of Minnesota. And so that's what I do. So I work on soybean research. I have some corn projects as well. And doing that generalized research, then we can share the results with farmers. And our overall goal is to help them to increase their yields and hopefully their profitability on farm. And so education and research.
Obviously, and it's not even just maybe about, it's not even about making a profit or whatever. It's about just making sure that the farms are well equipped to handle whatever comes their way and just, you know, make it through as well. So,
well, yes, farmers are great risk managers, mm-hmm. and so our goals are oftentimes to help them manage, learn more about these individual risks to help them manage those risks a little bit better, just to, because there's so many things that are outside of their control. The more we can learn about the things that they actually can control, the better off everybody will be.
Case in point, you know, the drought conditions that have been happening throughout the Minnesota region. You know, obviously you can't do a whole lot about that, but you can do stuff about kind of these pests or invasive species coming in. And one of them to talk about right off the bat is the soybean cyst nematode. Why don't you describe that?
Sure. So it's something that I like to talk about this time of year, because we really would suggest that people, right as they're getting ready to or soon after harvest, collect some soil samples and see what's going on below ground. But it's a small worm. It's microscopic. It lives in the soil. It moves any way that soil moves, so on used equipment, on our equipment from field to field, on wind, on water, on animals, et cetera.
Obviously, since it's microscopic, it's not going to get crushed or anything by the machinery
exactly.
or torn up. Yeah.
Yeah. So it basically lives underground and it feeds on soybean roots. So it has these little mouth parts that are kind of like a syringe, and it injects this syringe into plant cells, and it sucks up the water and nutrients that the plant would use for itself to basically live and produce the soybeans that we want to harvest. Mm-hmm. It takes that for itself. And so particularly in a year where you haven't had a whole lot of rain, sometimes you can see soybeans maturing a bit early in patches in soybean fields. One of the things that can cause that early maturity is SCN, soybean cyst nematode infestation in that field. And so if they feed on those plants, it just adds to the drought stress. SCN also tends to reproduce more during dry weather. Not sure why it does that, but it's able to produce more eggs, and that's how basically how it survives the winter. It survives in something called a cyst, which is the dead female nematode, and she's filled with eggs. So those cysts, that's kind of a protective structure, and that's where it spends the winter. And you can sometimes see symptoms of soybean cyst nematode infection in our fields. Unfortunately, it's not something you can pick out from the road. You can't say, oh, those yellow soybeans, those stunted soybeans, or those soybeans that haven't closed rows, that's infected with SCN. You have to dig up plants, and at a certain point in the growing season, you can actually see the cysts if you either have really good eyesight or have a magnifying glass or have bifocals. Oftentimes you can see them. I can see them pretty well with my bifocals. They tend to be
even at a microscopic level.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically they tend to all be the same kind of lemon shape. They'll vary in color. And they tend to be a lot smaller and more uniform in size and shape than than the root nodules that are there. Those, if you remember, those are there, and that's where nitrogen fixation takes place in the plant. But yes, right about this time and later, those cysts turn the color of soil. So you can't see them anymore.
Yeah.
They also drop from the roots. And so that's why we suggest taking soil samples. With soil samples, you can figure out the population density in your field. You just take 15 to 20 soil cores down to 8 inches, and you take them, put them in a bucket, mix them up, take about 2 cups of soil, put it in a soil sample bag, and you send it to a lab. And what they'll do is they'll get those cysts to float out on a sugar water solution. So they tend to float then. They crush the cysts, and they tell you how many eggs you have in a little bit less than half a cup of soil. So last year we had a sampling program that was through local FFA chapters. We still have that program this year. But one of the samples a little bit further south from here had 29,000 cysts in a little bit, eggs in a little bit less than a half a cup of soil. And so think about that. That's a lot of individual eggs.
Yeah.
Each one of those eggs, not all of them will survive the winter, but a good number of them will. And then they'll be there to infect your next soybean crop.
Mm-hmm.
So this
is a threat that doesn't go away.
Right. You're exactly right. Once a field is infested, it's going to be infested from here on out. And the number of eggs increases the chance of lost yield. So as egg counts increase, so does the potential yield loss. So that's why it's so important. But one thing that's pretty nice, I mean, nobody likes collecting soil samples. Nobody likes thinking about soybean cyst nematode. But one thing that is nice is that the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council, so that's a council that's made up of farmers from Minnesota soybean farmers. And these folks are basically elected by their peers, and they serve on this council. The council determines how funds that are collected when growers go to sell their soybeans, how those funds are used for research and promotion of soybeans in Minnesota. So some of the funds this year are going to be used for paying for sample analysis of soybean cyst nematode samples. And so anybody that has an interest in collecting some samples for SCN, all we ask is you give me a call. I will mail you some sample labels. You just slap them on your Ziploc bag with 2 cups of soil in it. I'll also send you instructions for how to collect a good representative sample. And then you collect the sample, you ship the sample into the lab, but the program will pay for the analysis.
Nice.
And so that analysis, I mean, that's pretty pricey. I I think I get a deal on it because it's for research purposes. I think my deal is $25, but I know that just if you did that on your own, it would cost significantly more than that. And so give me a call. Send me an email. My phone number is 218-281-8692. Please, this is something that's in your best interest. You don't want to find out the hard way that your fields are infested, because here with our soils and their high calcium carbonate content, SCN numbers tend to increase faster and be harder to manage and decrease those egg counts, even with active management. And so knowing that you have a problem early is really the best strategy for management.
For sure. And before we move on to our next topic, I did have kind of one lingering question from the stuff you were talking about. And maybe this is obvious to farmers, but it's definitely something that I would not be aware of. You mentioned like this will cause like soybeans to become mature early. What kind of is the issue with that?
You know. So it increases stress. So it in a drought situation, that plant is already really struggling. It wants to put on as many pods and as many seeds in those pods as possible. But it only has so many resources to do that. And if you have soybean cyst nematode also increasing stress and taking some of those resources for itself, that can really drive maturity as well.
Yeah, that the way you explain it, that does seem like a big issue if they mature early and there's not enough. I would assume that as they mature, they need more and more resources as they go on. Is that how that kind of works?
So that photosynthetic machinery is so important. All of that green takes the water from the soil. So if water's limiting, that's a limiting factor. Takes the water from the soil, it takes carbon dioxide and then the sun's energy, and it combines those two molecules to form sugars. Yeah. And so those sugars drive all the processes in the plant. And so if water is a limiting factor due to drought, due to SCN, you know, that's going to reduce the plant's ability to continue to grow and put on pods and beans.
Makes sense. Thank you for explaining you bet. That. Anytime. So let's go on to the next topic. And you were kind of telling me about a scouting trip that you were on through northwest Minnesota last week, north of Crookston, and you found a soybean native pest on wild plants that had been starting to feed on soybeans. What about that one?
Sure. So there's a new pest of soybeans. It had never been found on soybeans before in the U.S. until it was found last year in southeast Minnesota on soybeans. So it basically always had fed on two native plants in the U.S. So they're two weeds, American hog peanut, they're called, and slick seed fuzzy bean. So those are two members, two weeds, in the same family as soybeans. And so it's not much of a stretch that, you know, some mutations, randomly, naturally occurring mutations, might have happened in this particular pest that made it so that it likes soybeans now. So from down in the southeastern part of the state, well, now I found it in both eastern and western Marshall County. Those areas where I found it were right next to woods. So not windbreaks, not field windbreaks, because I've stopped at those fields as well, soybean fields, right next to windbreaks, and I never found it there. The reason why we think it really tends to survive the winter in the woods, it's a little moth, and the moth basically lays its eggs on the underside of leaves. The pest actually burrows into the leaf, and it forms like a little protective shell. So it kind of looks like a blister on the underside of soybean leaves. And the entire time it's a little larva. So it's like a little worm in there, and it's eating the leaf tissue. As it continues to feed, it makes more, the little mine that it makes gets bigger and bigger. And pretty soon you can have a, I don't know, inch and a half, I think was the biggest mine I found, but that's just a single mine with one larva in there that can make that kind of damage. And so from the top of the leaf, you wouldn't necessarily, at least early on, be able to tell that the leaf is infested with this particular pest. But if you flip the leaf over, these blisters are pretty evident. And so if you have woods right next to one of your soybean fields, just go, even the edge of the field, and look at those soybean plants and see, flip those leaves over and see whether or not you see these blisters.
Will this affect the soybeans in a similar way to the cyst nematodes, or do they affect it in a different way?
Mature
and stuff.
So good question. So this affects another part of the machinery of the plant. So this affects the cells where the chlorophyll is. So that's the material that basically does the work. So it basically absorbs the sun's energy, and then that's where it uses that energy to combine carbon dioxide and water to form sugars. And so it's affecting it from the other end. And it can, over time, like you can start to see symptoms of infection, basically on the top of the leaf tissue too. And it's thought that area where the mine is compromised as far as photosynthetic capacity is concerned. And so, like I said, it was just found last year. And so there's still work being done on it. Now we're especially up here where it isn't as prevalent, we're trying to figure out its range. And then there's some insecticide work being done further south, because we need to have a really high level of infection, infestation, in order to be able to apply an insecticide and see how much yield is actually being impacted.
Yeah, it makes sense that you wouldn't want to apply a lot of that insecticide if there wasn't a lot there, because that could hurt the plants and stuff. But
The insecticide itself wouldn't hurt the plants, but it, you know, every single input needs to at least pay for itself.
That's true.
Yeah, and so we need to know whether and how much yield loss takes place, and whether and when an insecticide is warranted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Angie, time flies when you chat about cyst nematodes, so we've only got about a minute left. So any for those of you just tuning in, we were talking to Angie Peltier, regional educator from the University of Minnesota. Any last second words that you want to talk about before we wrap it up here?
Sure. So again, folks with woods next to a soybean field, make sure you take a look. Just spend 10 minutes. I mean, really, I found these mines within 5 minutes of checking in the fields that were infested. Just go out, take a look. And then everybody else, we would really be interested in helping you out by supplying bag labels for soybean cyst nematode samples. Again, your checkoff dollars would pay for sample analysis. We'd provide instructions, bag labels, all of that, and then you'd take the sample and send it in. My number is 218-281-8692, and my email address is apelter@umn.edu.
Well, that's a lot of very good information there, Angie. Thank you very much for coming on Valley Talk again, and we'll see you in a few weeks.
Sounds good. Once Thanks, again. Cameron.
Yep. Thank you. So that was your Valley Talk program here on this Thursday, August 31st.